This is WJBC This Week.
At this point, the governor has not been willing to negotiate in a positive manner.
We're told that the governor and others have contingency plans for the state not having a budget.
That's the problem with this. People read the headline and go, oh my God, the guy got a 24% increase. Well, that's ridiculous.
It's just a dream come true, really. I'm just so excited to be a part of the Cardinals organization.
Not have to get up here more at 6 o'clock anymore. It'd be pretty nice.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, a Bloomington man explains why he opposes a settlement in his class action lawsuit against the NCAA. We'll introduce you to the Illinois High School Association's new executive director, while the group's outgoing director seeks to refute a media report about his compensation. A Redbird has a chance to make the majors. We'll talk to Paul DeYoung, who was drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals this week. WJBC's Throwback Thursday interview with News 25's Lee Hall. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Bloomington's Adrian Arrington was back in the news this week. He played football at Eastern Illinois University a decade ago and sustained multiple concussions, which caused lingering health problems that he still fights today. He took the NCAA to court and just this week said he opposes a proposed $70 million settlement in the class action suit. He explained why when he talked with WJBC this week.
When it comes to the case, I just want people to understand, like, the NCAA has to understand that these aren't the rules, you know what I'm saying, the rules that they made up in the day. First thing they said was, we are here to protect the player. And to me, as the NCAA has been brought along, it's more about cash and money instead of protecting the futures of student athletes. And I wanted the lawsuit, why I denied the lawsuit was because I wasn't aware of the settlement when it first came out. I found out in the newspaper through my dad. He called. He was like, did you know your case settled? I was like, what do you mean? He says, in the newspaper. And that's when I called my lawyers, asked what was going on. And I've been waiting 4 years. I still got brain damage. I'm still trying to get answers from doctors. And for the settlement to come out with $70 million, the lawyers getting $15 million in research and things, it's still not bringing answers to what I struggled with in college and finding out I was hurt while I was in college.
And that was at Eastern Illinois University. Now, the attorney then helped broker this deal, and you were his top plaintiff. And I take it he did not contact you then.
No, he didn't contact me and let me know. Even when the case first went to agreement, I didn't know about that. And then also in the fact that they tried to restructure it, I didn't know that they almost came up with a restructure deal a little while ago. He didn't even inform me about that.
So from what we read in reports, you're seeking new representation. Is that the case?
Yes, I'm seeking new representation that is real serious and passionate about the cause of the future of student athletes or college sports, because it is a great thing to be a student athlete or to earn a scholarship, to use your work ethic and talents to build your future. But I just feel that the settlement that was agreed to now doesn't do that and help the future of the game and the future dreams of student athletes.
The agreement, as we understand, includes $70 million that the NCAA has set aside to test current and former athletes for signs of brain injury. It seems as if that's addressing the problem in the future, but I guess doesn't help so much in the past for players like yourself who've done playing football for a number of years.
Yeah, it doesn't because, well, like I said before, when I was in college, I got hurt while I was still in college. So, therefore, I didn't know my insurance wasn't going to get paid for. I didn't know that nobody would have my back. I didn't know I was going to have seizures. I didn't know I was having memory loss. I didn't know I was going to struggle with class. So I worked hard even after my injury to finish college. And to get out into the real world, not to be able to use your degree to be on disability, to be on welfare, that is not what I went to college for. That was not what my dream was. And I feel that the NCAA needs to answer to these issues about what happens to a player if they're mentally messed up while they're in college and even after college.
Is there a settlement that you would find satisfactory to address specifically your point about helping those who unknowingly played the game and suffered these injuries?
Yeah, I can't give the exact answer, but hopefully we can work out something that helps pay with medical expenses while when you're hurt in college, if the injury comes in college. Maybe we can change something about insurance payment while you're a student. Have it guaranteed being you have insurance when you're on full scholarship. And also return to pay guidelines for concussions. And in general, just helping people that are struggling to live a normal life with mental injury. Because if you leave college with a brain injury, that degree or whatever you have is a waste of your time because you can't be a productive citizen in America.
How has life been for you following your college days? As you said, college was a struggle because you were trying to get through these classes while dealing with these head injuries.
Oh, yeah. I come from a low-income environment, and I was like, I'm the first person to ever go to college. So I had big dreams and goals to come out and help provide for my family and to be able and for these injuries to occur while I was still in school and not to be able to pay for insurance. It just turned my life upside down. It's just like my work ethic in high school, college, and to my determination to be a good father and a husband, it's totally in the wash now because I don't have to start from ground zero.
Do you foresee a settlement, perhaps, in which the NCAA would say, okay, we can't go back and fix what has been done, but we'll do whatever we can financially to help those in the future, and perhaps student-athletes sign some sort of waiver that says they acknowledge that the sport they play could potentially lead to a brain injury that might satisfy a large percentage of the people? Would something like that be satisfactory, even though former players like yourself would be sort of left in the dark?
My thing is with the players that's injured now, I would want us to have some type of insurance or financial help to help us get answers from doctors or help us with medical bills and help us with medicine and things like that. And in terms of the past players, it's not so much you can do to prevent the injuries that happened in college from the past player because it's already happened. But the negligence that the schools and NCAA show, they have to answer to that, you know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I am here. My biggest thing is to change the rules and regulations for the future of the NCAA because a lot of kids are out here dreaming about having a chance to play in college sports or to finish school, and they don't understand the rigorous schedules of being a student athlete, the risk of being a basketball or football player, because you can get injured in any sport and your life can change. And I feel the NCAA needs to answer to these kids, to the dreams of the future of this America, because kids are really out here dreaming and don't understand the scams and the nonsense that's going on with the NCAA. And that's my biggest thing, is to change the rules for the future of this game, because people are out here dreaming.
The NCAA is, of course, a powerful organization, not only one of the most powerful in professional or in sports, but across the business landscape in the country. What have you learned about the NCAA since you decided to take them on in this way?
I've found that the NCAA, to me, seems like they're not the people that they're saying they are. Like you said, with this case, I found out that the NCAA seems like a money-hungry, greed business instead of the betterment of the future of student-athletes and their dreams.
That was Adrian Arrington of Bloomington. Concussions are a major concern at the Illinois High School Association, which named its new executive director this week. Craig Anderson, the former Olympia football coach and Washington High School athletic director, takes over next January. One of the sports that Anderson has presided over in his 5 years at the IHSA is football, which could see major changes as the association faces a lawsuit over its handling of concussions. Anderson talked with WJBC's Dan Swaney this week.
I guess football's at the top of the list right now with all the safety issues that are out there for football. Where does all of that stand right now, or is it still kind of a process in motion?
Yeah, it certainly is. We continue to meet jointly, our football advisory committee and our sports medicine advisory committees, and we have a proposal in front of our board, actually, that they're going to hear or vote on next Monday at their board meeting. But it continues to be an ongoing process of bringing into place, limited restrictions, but restrictions to put in place to just create more safety for participants. So, yeah, it's definitely ongoing. And, the lawsuit continues to be over our head a little bit, and something that is going to take a long time to work towards and to get that resolved. But I know with Marty's leadership over the next 6 months, and I plan on taking off, and I have a similar opinion to his in regards to that lawsuit relative to football, that we'll fight that to the bitter end for our schools.
And you are responding to the situation, though, pretty forcefully. I mean, you're taking a look at things like eliminating full contact during summer. You're scaling back on the amount of time that kids can have helmet-to-helmet contact, so to speak, in practice. Is that the way it's headed right now, is that you just have to put those measures into place in order to deal with the current landscape that's out there?
Yeah, I believe it is. And, you know, we don't have any, quote, evidence that would say, you know, you need to limit it to exactly this amount of time where kids can only hit this much. But, you know, when you look at the big scheme of things, the medical history and information does tell us that, you know, multiple hits over and over and over. And so if we can reduce that at all, you know, that's what we're trying to do and create a safer safer playing opportunities for kids. And I'll tell you that I sit on the National Rules Committee for football, and over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, we've implemented rules to really bring into place more safety, you know, bringing in and penalizing for targeting when kids, you know, lead with, tackle with, or even as a running back, when they lead with the crown of their helmet, that should be penalized. And to take that out of the game so that kids are using their helmets solely for safety and not for the purpose of leading with to make a tackle and doing those kinds of things.
Well, as you are now going to become the new executive director, is the lawsuit kind of priority one for the IHSA right now?
In my opinion, it is. You know, it's something that we need to definitely take care of, and you know, our Play Smart, Play Hard campaign is going to be on the forefront. It's getting national attention just to try to get the notice out there that, you know, the game is much safer than it was 10, 12, 20 years ago. And so it definitely is something that we have to be aware of. You know, each sport and activity is important, but, you know, the landscape of football and what football, how football has been targeted is extremely important for us to preserve football in our high schools.
And to that end, it looks like your time as executive director is going to be at the front end of when this gets down to really seriously redefining the rules for high school football in the state of Illinois. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, and when I take over in January, and I haven't seen timelines to know that for sure, but I anticipate that we're going to be moving in a direction where, you know, we're going to have to be taking that head on. So it'll be a critical time, especially in regards to football, for us to be in a position where we can fight that and hopefully be successful.
You know, Marty Hickman's done an awful lot as far as expanding the exposure of all the things the IHSA covers. It's not just, as it was reported, I think, yesterday in a Chicago paper, a sports organization. You actually do a lot more than that. I mean, you have all kinds of scholastic things that you oversee. And Marty, I think, has done a really nice job in broadening that. Is that something else that you think you can pick up and continue to improve on?
Absolutely. You know, I bring that that activity side to the position. You know, not many people know that I participated in band and chorus for 4 years. I was the lead of a musical my junior year. You know, they see me as a former athletic director, and so much of what I've done, and I played two sports in college, so sports has been a big part of what I have done. But I also understand and very much appreciate the good things that happen for kids on the activity side. So, like Marty, it'll continue to be at the forefront of what I want to preserve in the high school. And, you know, if we can add more things, more activities, in terms of IHSA involvement on the activity side, it'll be definitely something I'll consider.
Okay, you said you were the lead in a musical. What was the musical?
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Can you do a little bit for us right now without embarrassing the office?
Well,
no,
well,
probably
I'm
not.
I'm afraid I can't. I gave up the singing side shortly after that very short stint of my public singing.
Good. So, hey, we're talking on the phone with Craig Anderson, who is the soon-to-be new executive director of the IHSA. Is there Is there a, I guess, a need for the IHSA to kind of get the word out about what the organization is? I mean, the, as was pointed out yesterday, a lot of people believe this has just everything to do with sports and nothing else with high school, and that's really not the case.
Yeah, you're right. And, yeah, we need to probably do a better job of that. You know, we have, you know, activities directors that are separate from athletic directors that serve great roles in our schools. But definitely, you know, Marty has chaired that position, and it's a role that I see myself stepping right into.
That was new IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson with our Dan Swaney. The Chicago Sun-Times reported this week that Marty Hickman, the soon-to-be retiring executive director of the IHSA, received a compensation increase of 24% during the 2013-14 school year. Hickman called in to refute the report. He talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin and Colleen Reynolds this week.
Congratulations on the pay raise.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's unfortunate, Scott, that guys like you are out there kind of talking about that when you really don't know the facts. I didn't get a pay raise of 24%. It says that in the article, and you're really doing a disservice to certainly me and the listeners by rambling on about that.
Well,
straighten
us out.
Well, it's talking about deferred compensation. It's a pension plan. Do you have the article in front of you?
Yeah.
What's it say about my salary? It says it decreased 1% over the last year, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The other is a pension plan, Scott. It's I don't, maybe you have a pension plan, but that's paid out over time, over years and years and years once I retire. It's an actuarial determination of the value of the pension plan. It's not money that I receive, and it says that right in that article.
Well, I'm reading the article. Sharing school with incomes reported a 24% increase in the salary and benefits. So that's what you're talking about, of its top executive who plans to retire early next year. Is that correct or incorrect?
And am I retire?
Reported a 24% increase in the salary and benefits of its top executive, that be you. Is that correct or incorrect?
No, it's not correct. It's a pension plan. The compensation is what you saw earlier. And if you read down further in that article and what the auditor said about the article, it says that is not money that I receive. And that's the problem with this. People read the headline and go, oh, my God, the guy got a 24% increase. Well, that's ridiculous.
Well, but it is deferred compensation. It is compensation, and it is an increase.
It's an actuarial determined number that values the pension plan over my lifetime. Some years it's zero. Some years it's a number, but it's compensation that maybe if I live long enough, I'll get over time in a pension plan like the TRS plan. You know, we have a pension plan like the teachers do. It's a defined benefit plan like state employees do. It's similar to that. It's privately funded, but it won't pay me out a nickel if I don't live long enough. But it's certainly not compensation that I received last year.
But you did get an increase in what will be your pension, correct?
No, the pension didn't change. It's just there's a value attributed to that. It's an actuarially determined number. I'm sure, and I'm not an actuary, but I'm sure if you got an actuary on here, they could explain to you how a defined benefit pension plan works. It's a value that is paid out over time, but it's I couldn't touch a nickel of that last.
So there,
no,
there,
you can't.
So there was no increase in your in that pension, in that deferred compensation. There was no increase.
That's correct.
All right, tell me if this is true or not. During the 2013-2014 school year, totaled your compensation during the 2013-2014 school year. Total $372,293, up $73,007 from the year before.
I think you're looking at a total compensation number that includes the deferred compensation, which is just a reporting mechanism valuing the pension. My salary is there, and it's accurate. but the other is not. It's not money that I received during that period of time.
So you're saying that $73,000 increase that they cite includes deferred compensation?
Yeah, it includes the value of the pension plan.
So it's money you will receive.
It's money I'll receive over time. Once I stop getting a salary, once I start drawing a pension over time.
So what do you think? What do you think their problem is with you, Marty? Because I said it's a private organization. You know, if you don't like it, tough beans, not taxpayer dollars. So what is it with these watchdogs? What do they have against the IHSA?
Well, they don't like the fact that we're a private organization, Scott. We're a private organization, like Special Olympics, like the United Way, like Red Cross, like the Boy Scouts, like the Girl Scouts. So, you know, we're a private organization, and you know, some folks don't like that, but that's what we are. We're a 501c3. We follow every law that 501c3s are required to follow, and they want to have a heightened level of scrutiny over the Illinois High School Association, and that's really what it boils down to. We publish our audit. It's on our line. You can go on our line online today and look at our audits over the last several years. We're not hiding anything from these folks.
So a lot of the evaluation that people are supposed to look at when they're considering donating to, say, a charity or a nonprofit is what percentage of the revenue brought in goes to administration. So in the case of the IHSA, what would you say that is?
Well, we have a budget of about $11 million. And our salaries probably somewhere $2 million something. When you talk about straight salary and benefits to people, it's probably somewhere around $2 million. So I'm 20.
The other story said $2.5 million on 23 employees.
Yeah, that could be something like that. I mean, when you count in insurance benefits and all the things that go along with, you know, above and beyond salary things that folks get, it could be something around there. So what's that, 20-some percent?
Yeah, that's another way for people to look at it, I think.
Yeah, and then how does that measure up?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But we were talking earlier, the schools are behind you. Got big crowds last time this was brought up and people got together.
Well, so Scott, our schools could do whatever they want with this organization at any time. And if they're unhappy with that, we're a self-governing organization. They could throw me out the door tomorrow. They could throw all our staff out the door tomorrow if they wanted to. But by and large, our membership has been very supportive of what we do. We don't charge people dues. We don't charge people entry fees. We share revenue to the tune of over $2 million a year back to schools. And if our schools want to do something different, they will. They can. They can form a whole new organization if they want to.
Yeah, but we know that's not going to happen. That would be a...
Well, why would it? You know, I mean, if they felt that there was something untoward here or that they needed to do differently, they would. It's quite frankly, the Sun-Times has a vendetta against the IHSA, and they have for years.
That was IHSA Executive Director Marty Hickman with Scott and Colleen. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. This week's WJBC Throwback Thursday interview was with Lee Hall, the longtime sports anchor for News 25, WEEK in Peoria. He got his start in broadcasting at WJBC about 30 years ago. Hall talked with WJBC's Terry James this week about his time at JBC, his TV career, and his Elvis impersonations.
Thank you very much.
Now, people might be wondering, why in the heck are we playing Elvis? I'll let you tell them. What is the connection between you and Elvis?
Elvis is turning over in his grave right outside right now. I'll tell you that. It started as a gag about 15 years ago. My buddy Dave Wright and I were
kind of the entertainment committee on the St. Jude Memphis Peoria run, and we'd always do some kind of a little skit or musical thing. And one year we pulled into Decatur during Decatur days, and it was about 7 in the morning, and I saw an Elvis came walking through the parking lot, and I woke everybody up, and we got our pictures taken with Elvis, and I said, we've got to get suits next year, and we'll do Elvis. so we did, and so that was, and I've been kind of, we like to call it Elvis tribute artists. So I've been doing that on the side a little bit ever since. So
do you do this at parties? I mean, do people hire you out to be Elvis?
Yeah. Oh yeah, and in fact, I've got a band now, a country band called Lee Haw, and
but
Elvis.
Yeah, that's Lee H-A-W for people
just
wondering.
Like, just like hee-haw.
Yeah.
Hee-haw, and Elvis is much more lucrative because I don't have to split the money.
Right,
so
right.
I don't have the overhead. But, yeah, nursing homes, class reunions. I did a show for a doctor's group here a couple of weeks ago. I thought, boy, they're not going to be into this at all, and they were great. So the whole thing of that is if people go along with the premise that here's a guy dressed as Elvis and we're just going to have fun. And that's what I do. I don't think I look like Elvis or sound like Elvis, but it's a lot of fun. And it's really been a great thing. I did a couple of, gospel tribute, concerts with the Stamps Quartet. And one of the guys had actually, is still in the Stamps, that sang with Elvis. So that's my tie to the big guy. And we raised probably $13,000 for St. Jude, so that was kind of a way of giving back. So it's been a lot of fun, and it led to the band, which is been trying to play the guitar all my life. So it's a hoop. It's a, because I don't get enough attention being on TV. So
well, when I watch you on TV tonight, I'm going to be picturing you as Elvis. I just hope you know that right now.
I get that a lot. Every performance, people say, I will never look at you the same way again on TV.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. You are, of course, we're talking to Lee Haw, sports director since 1988 at WEEK. But in your past life, you were a disc jockey right here at WJBC here on our Throwback Thursday.
I was.
Yeah. What year was that?
I went to school at St. Ambrose College for a year, and then I went to ICC here in Peoria Junior College, and then I transferred to Illinois State in, it was the fall of 83.
Okay.
So it was somewhere around there, fall of 83, beginning of 84. I had worked at a radio station over here, spinning country hits from midnight to 5. And then was lucky enough to get on at WJBC, which I thought was such a huge honor and great, just a great learning experience as a college kid. And, being in front of an open microphone, as you know, is great training for a young broadcaster. And I tell kids all the time, go be on the radio. Learn how to talk without having notes in front of you and just, you know, let it fly. So those were great days. I did I did a lot of board shifts for ISU games. So I listened to Dick Ludke way back when he was a young guy too. Neither one of us are that anymore, of course. But
this was a really short stint for you, though, because you went to WEEK in 1984.
Right, I started as an intern. That's correct. Yeah, I was there for probably about a year, and I did a lot of. We did the sponsor wheel back then. You guys don't still do that, do you?
We still have a button for it on the screen, believe it or not. And I've always wondered, what in the heck is that? But I have a good idea.
Yeah, people, your longtime listeners know exactly what I'm talking about. We'd spin the sponsor wheel and try and win Bunny. Let's see. I remember Nibaki Vacuum. There's a free plug for them. They were one of the sponsors way back then.
Oh, okay, yeah. I know exactly where that's at.
I did the... the flea market. I did the flea market.
Oh, you know, Dan yeah. Sweeney just loves the flea market, and I say that sarcastically.
Yeah, Lee, I've got a washer and dryer on the back porch. Neither one of them work. Anybody that wants to can come get them.
Yep, I know that.
I got a stack of National Geographics. I'd like a dollar for those.
I wonder why we stopped doing that.
I don't know.
No reason.
Great training. I mean, you had to think on your feet and just kind of go with the flow. So it was great, you know. And I heard that little teaser from Don Munson there. That guy was pretty excited about that one.
Yep, I won. You yep. never know what you're going to get from the listeners. You really don't.
No.
You had kind of an interesting experience where you went to Spalding High School in Peoria, and which isn't still around, is it?
The buildings are still there, but no. It's Spalding and Bergen were the two Catholic high schools, and Academy of Our Institute.
Sure.
Academy was a girls' school. Spalding Institute was the boys'. They were right across the street from each other. They merged in 1974 to become Academy of Our Lady Spalding Institute, and then that merged with the other Catholic high school, Bergen, in, I want to say, 1988.
Well, you played baseball, and you were a senior third baseman, and you had a very famous classmate.
I was co-captains with a fellow by the name of Joe Girardi.
Wow.
Who, went on to play, played for the Cubs and the Rockies. Had a cup of coffee with the Cardinals late in his career, but he was with the Yankees and won three World Series rings as a player and one as a manager. And my line is, combined, Joe and I have four World Series rings, and I'm very, very proud of that.
Well, when did you know you wanted to be a sports broadcaster?
You know, it was back in high school. I remember one of the kids in my class, a kid named Andy Tucker. I still remember it. We were talking about what we were going to do someday, and I said something about being on TV and being a sportscaster. And he said, "Oh, you'd be really good at that." He was a smart kid, so I thought he knew what he was talking about. So.
Well, it's worked out always, well.
Yeah. I mean, it's working for a living. That's what I always say.
That was Lee Hall from News 25 with Terry James. He's moving from Redbird Red to Cardinal Red. Paul DeYoung became Illinois State's highest selection in the Major League Baseball draft in 30 years when the Cardinals selected the Antioch native in the fourth round. DeYoung talked with WJBC's Joe Ragusa this week.
Can you tell me how that feels?
Well, it's just a dream come true, really. I'm just so excited to be a part of the Cardinals organization. I'm looking forward to see how it develops and hopefully make it to Busch Stadium one of these days.
So it already sounds like you're pretty committed to signing with the Cardinals. Would I be reading that wrong?
Nope. That's probably what I'm prepared to do. I think I've accomplished a lot at Illinois State, but I think it's time to move on and start my pro career.
And of course, the only reason I'm saying that, because you have the 1 year of eligibility left. Have you graduated from Illinois State yet?
Yes, I do have the 1 year of eligibility left, but I did graduate with my degree in biochemistry this past spring, so really I'm just ready to start my pro career.
Gotcha. And I know last year you were drafted in the 38th round, so you being on Major League Baseball radar isn't really that big of a deal, but you know, 38th round compared to the fourth round this year, that's a pretty big jump. Were you expecting to get drafted that high?
Well, I knew last year, the 38th round, I was expecting to go a little bit higher than that to consider signing, and decided to turn that offer down. I knew that in my heart and in my head, I could improve my stock and have a better year, and also I wanted to kind of get my degree and accomplish some other things at ISU. So really, coming back last year was the right decision for me, and I knew if I went out and did what I could do, that I could improve my stock. And you know, being drafted in the fourth round, maybe I didn't expect that high, but you know, I definitely thought I could go on day two.
And I know you're out of you're from the Chicago suburbs, and I almost hesitate to ask this question, but Cardinals, Cubs, or White Sox?
Well, I'm a Cardinals fan now. That's all that matters, right?
No, it's all good. Paul DeYoung is with us, Illinois State infielder, former Illinois State infielder, I suppose. And I noticed on the releases, I saw the one Twitter account had you as a third baseman. Another Twitter account had you as a left fielder. You played several different positions at Illinois State. So where do you feel like you fit in on a major league roster or in a pro roster?
Probably as a utility player, kind of the similar role that I've had with Illinois State. I think I fit in well at the corner positions, maybe a little bit more like third, left, or right. But I'd like to continue my development as a catcher and see where that can take me. I know that there's ability to catch and hit for power is rare, and if I can do both of those, it really, you know, makes me a standout, and that might get me to that big league roster. But, you know, I think they'll move me around and see where I fit in, and it may be one of those things that that's one of my roles is to continually move around, and I'm comfortable with that.
And of course, the Cardinals have Yadier Molina still as catcher, probably for the foreseeable future. So I imagine he's going to be a hard guy to supplant in that role. So, can you talk about what Illinois State has done for you? I mean, were you really a guy who was looked at as a high school prospect at all?
I was kind of a slow developer in high school due to some injuries, but you know, I was fortunate for Coach Kingston and Coach Durkak to give me a chance back in 2011, and you know, I worked hard and developed myself and tried to get better, and you know, I got my shot after my redshirt year and never looked back from there. But you know, Illinois State got me my education, played some great baseball, met some great people, and it's just been a great experience, and I'm glad that I left there on good terms. And you know, I'm just excited about this next chapter in my life.
And you mentioned earlier when you were drafted last year in the 38th round, you felt like you needed to come back to Illinois State to accomplish certain things. Do you feel like you've accomplished all you can do at Illinois State?
Yeah, I won a few awards, a couple all-conference selections, got my degree. You know, really, I think I've had a pretty good college experience, and you know, I'm just ready to, like I said before, start the next chapter of my life and just kind of appreciate all the things Illinois State has done for me.
That was St. Louis Cardinal draftee Paul DeYoung with Joe Ragusa. The Weekend News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. While Governor Rauner's administration and state lawmakers remain at an impasse over a state budget with the June 30th deadline looming, state workers are concerned about the lack of progress on contract talks with the governor's office as well. WJBC's Joe Ragusa reports.
The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees is hosting rallies across the state this week to pressure Governor Rauner to drop some of his requests, like a wage freeze and reduced vacation time. Kim Romersberger with the Department of Human Services says she's not sure what will happen when the current contract expires.
There have been rumors of lockout. Again, we don't know that for a fact, but that's the rumor that's going around. And we're very concerned because the people that we work for really need these services.
The current contract ends on June 30th. In Bloomington, Joe Ragusa, WJBC and WJBC.com.
Bloomington city officials are reviewing a developer's proposal to redevelop downtown. The proposal that's available on the city's website comes from developer Jeff Gabelhausen. He wants to tear down several buildings, then sell the property to the city for $8.2 million. Then he or someone else could build something new. Mayor Terry Renner tells WJBC any environmental studies or appraisals would have to be done by the developer.
We need to have assurances that Gabelhausen is going to deliver what he says he's going to deliver. And if he doesn't do it, he doesn't get the money.
Renner says he's seen lots of interest from developers, especially since the Route 66 Visitor Center opened in downtown Bloomington. U.S. Cellular Coliseum ended the 2015 fiscal year in the red. Central Illinois Arena Management, the company in charge of operating the Coliseum, says the arena operated at a loss of about $500,000 between April of last year and May of this year. Revenue was short of expectations by $1.2 million. Bart Rogers, vice president of SIAM, said the report shows the venue was hurt by the closing of the parking garage and a slow year in concert tours nationwide. Rogers says the overall economic impact on the community was $12.5 million over the year. Former Redbird and NBA player and coach Doug Collins is coming back to Bloomington. The ISU All-American will speak at the YMCA's Legacy Dinner in July. B.J. Wilkin, director of the YMCA, says Collins will share stories about his own experience with the YMCA.
And through one of our donors of the YMCA, we were able to connect that way. And, you know, Doug just agreed to do this. And so we were just so grateful and humbled by this this gesture that he's extended. So we're pretty excited about it.
The event is July 9th at the Bloomington Country Club. Proceeds from the Legacy Dinner will benefit the Wise Strong Kids campaign. Bloomington police officers topped $10,000 in their annual Cop on Top fundraiser. Sergeant Todd Kyle and Officer Bill Wright raised $10,200 during the 12 hours they were camped on top of Dunkin' Donuts for the Special Olympics Law Enforcement Torch Run, while normal police raised $7,400 in only the second year for their fundraiser. This is the 13th year for Bloomington Police. The Special Olympics Illinois Summer Games are in Bloomington Normal this weekend. The Country Life Music Festival in Chillicothe has been canceled. The event, scheduled for July 17th through the 19th at Three Sisters Park, was to include headliners Toby Keith, Keith Urban, Leonard Skinner, Travis Tritt, and many others. And after 38 years as a dispatcher in McLean County, Andy Stubblefield is retiring. Stubblefield says his job changed dramatically over the nearly four decades. At the beginning, nearly everything was done with the paper and pencil. Now most of the job is electronic. He says this has led to a much different mindset for dispatchers.
You know, back then, we, for like ambulances, we just had a number. We called a seven-digit number for a town, said we need an ambulance to go to such and such a place, and that's the last you heard of them. Nowadays, we give pre-medical information before an ambulance even gets in the calls, and they do CPR on the phone and things like that.
Stubblefield says it'll take a while for the fact that he's retired to settle in, but says he's looking forward to no longer having to wake up at 6 a.m. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now we take a look ahead at the week to come. Normal's Town Council will meet on Monday night, while Bloomington Aldermen will gather for a committee of the whole. The McLean County Board holds its monthly meeting on Tuesday. Connect Transit will hold listening sessions on Tuesday and Thursday nights, one in Bloomington, one in Normal, to gather feedback about current and future transit service. And on Thursday, Ed Charlo from UC Bank will provide data about McLean County's economic progress at the annual McLean County Economic Outlook Breakfast at Illinois Wesleyan. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Stock.